Coming up on the Branding Deep Dive podcast.
Building product and code is increasingly becoming commoditized. 15 years ago, really hard. Like, you had to buy your own servers. You had to code in like with poor frameworks. It's just a very different world. I think the barriers to entry have decreased quite a bit. And so anybody can do it. There's no code tools. There's lots of platforms. There's lots of frameworks. Things have gotten quite a bit easier. And so distribution matters more than ever. Marketing matters more than ever. How do you get in front of your customer and how do you get their buy-in? That matters a lot now. And if you think about like traditional companies, not non-software companies, that's where a lot of their spend is. It's like marketing, like Coca-Cola, Pepsi, they're spending on marketing because, I don't know, like their products are almost commoditized. Anybody can make soda. And the same thing is happening, slowly happening to software. There's a trillion marketing SaaS companies out there. How do you stand out?
This is Ahmed Shima, and welcome to the Branding Deep Dive podcast. If you're new here, this is a podcast where we have in-depth discussions about what brands are doing well to drive customer loyalty and how you can take those principles and apply them to your own brand. Today, we're talking to Parthi Loganathan. Parthi is a serial entrepreneur, not the kind that makes money off of teaching other people how to make money, but the kind that actually builds products and ships them. Parthi is a former Google product manager, and he's been in the startup space since. He's built a few startups, and currently, he is the CEO and founder of LetterDrop.com. In this episode, we dive deep into the rise of product management, the importance of distribution, collecting data for startups, and much, much more. If you're a founder or have ever thought of founding a startup, pause this right now, grab a notebook, you're going to want to take notes. Now, here's Parthi. Parthi, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for accepting the invite. Really excited to have you here. Have a lot of questions for you. Before we get started, for the people in the audience that may not know who you are and what you've been working on for the last number of years, can you give a brief introduction?
Yeah, thanks for having me. Yeah, I'm the founder and CEO of LetterDrop.com. We're a content marketing ops platform. So we help businesses with everything from idea generation to project management to actual publishing and distribution around like blogs, newsletters, and social media. Before that, I was a product manager at Google, worked on the search team and on the chat team. I've been in startup land for the past two and a half years now, working on a variety of products, some of which I've sold, some of which bring passive income in the background. And I've been focusing on LetterDrop for almost a year now.
Parthi, just looking at your background here, you went to Columbia, right?
Yeah.
So I'm going to ask you a question, and this is like a personal thing. A lot of my friends that I know that kind of went to these top schools are now they're trying to get into product. And what I'm seeing is that, like, when I had conversations with them, I was like, I've never heard you talk about any product ideas or anything like this. And it seems like it's becoming product, and also startups are becoming a way to signal to the market, hey, I'm an awesome person, right? Just some of these universities, they bring a lot of clout to your rep, right? And so the reason why I want to ask you is because you're someone that not only have you have the signal value, right? You went to Columbia, Google, now you have all these startups under your belt, but you've actually built products and you've actually sold them. You've actually done the grind. What I want to ask you is like, first off, do you see, I haven't been in product. Do you see a lot of people that are just in it to make a lot of money or signal that they're really cool? And then the second thing I wanted to ask is, how do you actually make sure that you're not in that mindset and you are building something and actually creating something rather than just trying to look cool?
Yeah, I think I'm going to distill that down to maybe two questions. Like, one is, why is something like product management really popular right now, perhaps? And maybe the second question is, are people focusing on like looking cool or external indicators of success and trying to validate themselves? Or are people trying to create something of value, do things that they enjoy and that they're good at? And what's driving that? And I think the second is probably more of a philosophical question. I can answer the first question for sure. I think product management really wasn't a discipline until recently. I'd say maybe Google was one of the first companies to start thinking about product management very specifically. There's a whole story about how Marissa Mayer was one of the earliest employees at Google. She started like this APM program at Google, which I was a part of. And the entire focus was, hey, we're going to make technical people product managers, because all the PMs, or PMs in quotes till now, come from a business background and they're not able to succeed at a technology company. And I think that's grown quite a bit over the past 15, 18 years. That's existed. There are many more product management roles now than there were before. I think there's a lot of marketing and branding around it, where people are like, oh, like as a PM, you're the mini CEO of your product or something. A lot of that honestly is BS. At the end of the day, you're part of an organization. Your job is, hey, like we have a lot of moving parts in our company. How do I get these various stakeholders to work together to ultimately drive business success through product? And how do I like make sure like we hit these metrics? You as an individual, as a product manager, really don't, like, you're not essential. If you leave, the company will keep going, maybe not in the right direction, but it'll keep going. The product will be built. Engineers will keep shipping. Designers will keep designing. Marketers will keep marketing. You don't need to be there. But I do think like a good PM on a team can really help focus a team and help you go from, hey, here's like a dumpster fire of a product, to this is something really good that's creating a lot of value. And it's a hard job. I think it's very much overly like glamorized, and I think it's very popular for that reason, but a lot of people go in and then they understand or realize like what this is all about. I think your second question was around what are the reasons to be a PM or do any of these kinds of jobs or whatnot. And I would say I think when people are early in their career, they're very much, and people are generally influenced by the media and things around them, what their friends say, what's cool. It takes a while for people to start building their own opinions on what they think is important versus what the world tells them is important. And in some ways, like, I've also fallen into that trap. I do think I followed traditional paths to success by just like working really hard for the longest time, like Google and Columbia and YC and all that stuff. But then you go through all the hard stuff and you just realize, hey, I don't know if this stuff actually makes me happy. What do I enjoy doing? What do I want to do with my life? How do I want to spend my day to day? And then you start thinking more about, okay, how can I create or construct an environment for myself where I'm happy in the moment and I feel like I'm providing value and I'm doing the things that I enjoy doing? And I think everyone gets there eventually, some sooner than others. And so I just hope like more people realize that earlier in their careers and don't end up on a track that they never intended to be on and were too afraid to leave. It's very hard to leave that track and you will face a lot of failure. But I think in the long run, it pays off to deviate and branch off and do something that's uniquely you. Whether that be starting a company or like just finding a role and company that makes sense for you.
Yeah, that's powerful. I think you summed it up really well. I think, especially with all the content that's out there and how much we're consuming, it is really like a lot of times we're just acting on the opinions of other people from what we're being fed. So that's powerful. Thank you for sharing that. I wanted to shift gears a little bit and talk about, you're someone that's literally, I think a lot of people wear the hat like serial entrepreneur. I think it's been popularized with Gary Vee and stuff like that, but you're actually someone that's built a number of businesses. And when we were talking before we started recording, you said that you're not a public person. So what I'm really curious to hear is, how are you thinking through how to bring a product to market? Right now, nowadays, we have a lot of these companies, they benefit a lot from a public CEO, right? Elon Musk, for example, like you don't even need a marketing department sometimes if you have a, you know, really powerful brand in the CEO spot. So how are you thinking through how to bring a product to market and just any best practices you have for taking an idea once you have an MVP and then actually getting users?
I'm definitely not a public person in the sense that I've never done a podcast before or been on YouTube or anything like that. But I would say that I've definitely worked on my Twitter and LinkedIn presence. It's more so like long form, thoughtful content in the text format. Also, I work on a content marketing SaaS company, and part of my job is helping businesses figure out like how do they get their brand out there, how do they help educate their customers, how do I help them distribute their content. I think there is incredible value from having a personal brand, from your company having a brand, because honestly, like building product and code is increasingly becoming commoditized. 15 years ago, really hard. Like you had to buy your own servers. You had to code in like with poor frameworks. It's just a very different world. I think the barriers to entry have decreased quite a bit. And so anybody can do it. There's no code tools. There's lots of platforms. There's lots of frameworks. Things have gotten quite a bit easier. And so distribution matters more than ever. Marketing matters more than ever. How do you get in front of your customer and how do you get their buy-in? That matters a lot now. And if you think about like traditional companies, not non-software companies, that's where a lot of their spend is. It's like marketing, like Coca-Cola, Pepsi, they're spending on marketing because I don't know, like their products are almost commoditized. Anybody can make soda. And the same thing is slowly happening to software. There's a trillion marketing SaaS companies out there. How do you stand out? So yeah, I do think that every company should almost, I don't want to strongly encourage this, but I do say that, hey, like almost think about distribution first and product second. Figure out like where there is demand in the market, where are places where people have problems, they're always searching for solutions to their problems. They're Googling for answers. They're following the right people on Twitter. And they're looking for like content for thought leadership. And they're like, hey, like, how do I get better at sales? Or how do I build a Web3 app? Or how do I improve my GTM? How do I decrease my costs and support? People have these questions. And so if you can position yourself as a person who knows a lot about the space and can help people think through these problems, you'll often find like good ideas and good products to build just through the kinds of things you're saying. So first it becomes like you producing content, then becomes you maybe consulting for people, and then you realize patterns in terms of what kinds of things you're consulting for. And from that, you have a product in your hands. You just have to figure out, okay, how do I productize these things I'm doing for people? Because there's clearly demand. That's not the part I'm trying to validate anymore. It's more so, okay, like how do I build this and how do I automate it and how do I create a solution out of it? So yeah, very much a proponent of distribution first. I wouldn't say I've been the best at it historically. I come from an engineering and product background. So very much in the weeds on, okay, like how do we design the most amazing product? And if you build it, people will come. That is sometimes true, but in the vast majority of cases, it's not. And so you need to think about distribution, focus on distribution before product. There are exceptions. There are definitely places where Henry Ford and the Model T, like if you focus on distribution and ask people what they wanted, they'd be just, oh, better horses. You would never have built the car. And so I think that exists in today's world. People definitely don't know what they need, but still, I think even identifying that people want faster horses means like you can figure out the solution, the product later, but at least it's a problem.
Yeah, I'm surprised at that answer. I didn't think with your background, that's the advice that you would give.
I think it's one of those things where you make a ton of mistakes because of your biases and then you course correct.
Yeah. And then I remember you were giving us, we have a newsletter and you're giving us some advice. And one of the things you said was you need to spend as much time marketing as you do on the product, which is, I think that's a total shift. We were on the same thing. Hey, we have a decent product. We'll eventually find enough people. And we are slowly realizing that we need to figure out how to market this. Yeah, it's definitely. I was wondering if you can, I don't want to pressure you to share any specific examples from your companies that you've built, but you've gotten into Y Combinator with LetterDrop. And then I don't know if, have you, any of your other startups, have you tried to go that route?
So my story is, it's actually a little bit backwards. I quit my job without knowing what I was going to do apart from the fact that I was going to start a company.
Oh, wow.
And then, which I'm not sure if I recommend to other people, but that's what I did. And then over the course of the past two and a half years, I've shipped like 15 products, like full products. One of them sold for a small sum, not like a massive exit or anything, but enough to like add runway to our current company. And two of them, one of them went viral during the pandemic and then came crashing down as like things opened up. It's very much a pandemic era product. Mm-hmm. And the third one just keeps growing passively in the background. Good business, but like high churn, not something I'd want to invest all my time in, which is why it's, even though it's a good product with organic growth, I'm hey, like this business is inherently a churny product.
Mm.
So yeah, like I made a lot of mistakes and made a lot of iterations going through building, shipping, talking to customers for 15 different products. Most of them died. And for me, I'm just looking for that one thing that I want to spend a bunch of time on where I think, hey, there's a big market. There's a huge opportunity. I think in the process of building all of these companies, I've also, or these products or not companies, I've also learned a little bit more about what do I enjoy working on? What are the types of products I want to work on? And I don't think people understand that before they start a company. Mm. They don't understand what do you want? What do you care about? Because companies are really hard. And if you don't care about what you're working on, you're going to be hard pressed to continue when things get really tough, and they will get tough. So yeah, I would say just quit my job, got into YC actually with another idea. We were part of the COVID batch during YC. So the pandemic hit like 2/3 of the way in and fundraising dried up. We lost half of our customers, pivoted away from that product, had to let go of a co-founder, all kinds of things happened, and shipped a bunch of other products and finally landed on LetterDrop. So yeah, it's very much a zigzag, completely non-linear path to get to where I am today. And I think that's just startups and more generally life. No one really knows what they're doing. But I think through running a lot of experiments and exposing yourself to a lot of stuff, you start connecting the dots and getting ideas. Mm-hmm. And that's the most important thing. Like getting those ideas and like having those experiences inform what you do next.
One thing that I'm interested in, so there's two things that I guess let's start with the first one, which is like a LetterDrop right now on the subject of distribution. What's your strategy? I know content marketing is part of it. What else are you guys thinking through in terms of getting the word out and acquiring more customers?
Yeah. So LetterDrop started a little bit more creator focused, which is how I guess we met and you started using LetterDrop, and we still run that business. It's a very competitive market, and it's just purely a game of like customer acquisition, and whoever has the deepest pockets is going to win that game. And then, so I think there is a future flywheel in which that consumer part of the product drives to our business part of the product. Our business part of the product is the content marketing ops platform, which is just basically a souped up version of our sort of like consumer offering. We do a lot of content marketing and dog food, our own product. I tweet and link and post on LinkedIn quite heavily. We produce about 1 to 2 blog posts per week using our own platform. We're slowly seeing our organic traffic through SEO steadily climb up, and we get a lot of inbound that way. Me posting on like LinkedIn and Twitter definitely gets people in. They'll be like, oh yeah, like I saw your post, and we have to think about SEO for our business. So I reached out.
Mm.
Beyond that, it's early days. It's still like account-based marketing, running through like a cold outbound sales process. It's good that we have a lot of content, so people have heard of us in passing when we do reach out to them. Most of our early customers are other B2B YC companies for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've been seeing a lot of referrals through them. When a company suddenly starts like investing a lot in content, you're like, hey, like, what are you guys doing? And then they're like, oh yeah, we use this thing called LetterDrop, and then spreads from there. Yeah. I think it's like a pretty traditional SaaS playbook, a lot of inbound marketing and then combination of like outbound sales, and referrals. I think there's a lot of interesting go-to-market motions in the future where like, A, we start partnering with agencies, and then they distribute the product for us to their customers. We're not doing that right now, but it's something we've experimented with. But I think the product has to be modified for their use case. The second thing is we're helping connect freelance writers, editors, and illustrators with these companies. Most of them come from us just recruiting them off like job boards and stuff. But some of them are actually coming from our consumer product where somebody writes a newsletter for themselves and they're making money from that, but they're looking for additional sources of income. And writing for companies, if you want money quickly as a writer, like writing for companies is pretty good. And like companies really need content at like finding good talented writers who understand your domain and can produce engaging content is quite rare. And yeah, like it's a good market and you can charge a lot if you know what you're doing. So I think there's some sort of flywheel there where we get the consumer part and the writers just to get accustomed to LetterDrop. They go to other companies and they're like, oh yeah, you guys should check out LetterDrop because it makes it really easy to interact with freelancers like me. And we have this flywheel going. I think that's a little bit down the road. Right now, I'm just trying to get the basics set up through sales and inbound marketing. But it's definitely something we want to think about in terms of like, how do we make this grow exponentially as opposed to linearly?
One of the things you just highlighted there is like the number of pivots you guys have had since you started. And I remember when we first signed up, like the landing page was completely creator focused. And you go right on now, I can't even find, like you can find it, but it's more about like content marketing that works and stuff like that. And so one of the things I wanted to ask you is like, and I also was curious about versus Google, right? What kind of data are you using to inform the pivots? Like, how are you thinking through, okay, this isn't working, let's shift here. And then also going back to Google, when you have a product, what kind of like data testing, user research are they doing? And then how are you coming? Is it the same process or how does it differ?
Yeah, so I'd say at Google, we had a lot more data, like probably the most data of any company in the world, like maybe Facebook's on par or close. So I was in search, which is a 20-year, like just a massive project, like 3,000 plus people working on that thing. And you have hundreds of experiments going on in search on any given day, just little micro optimizations trying to figure out, okay, how do we show somebody searching for something that is actually valuable to them and that they're going to actually like open and click and read. And yeah, and so any small change we make there, we run an A/B test. There's a counterfactual. We have math stats PhDs who sit down and analyze all of our experiments, the various control arms, etc., to decide, hey, conclusively, is this the right decision for us to be making? Are we providing like better results for people using search? Very data driven, perhaps like too data driven almost. I also worked on G Suite at Google, or I think it's currently called Google Workspaces, like basically Gmail, Drive, Calendar, all that stuff. And that is an enterprise play, like we sell to companies like Boeing and stuff like that. And we had a lot less data there. As soon as you go enterprise, it becomes more about relationships. It's, hey, what does the IT admin at this Fortune 500 company want? Or what does their CIO want? They care about enterprise security, or they care about these AI features. Like, are they going to use these AI features? We don't know, but this is what sells. And so you can see how like different types of businesses use different kinds of data to make decisions. At the end of the day, it really comes down to your business model and what are you trying to sell. For enterprises, I need this person to buy my thing. For search, it's just, I just want as many people coming to Google searching and be happy every day. Because then we can make money off ads. We just need to keep them here. And then as long as that works, then the ad engine can run on the side. When you're at a startup, unlike a big company, you have zero data. Like, you can barely get anyone to talk to you. And so it's harder to be... I'd say if you definitely want to be data informed, we use PostHog and Google Analytics and a bunch of like analytics tools to look at our funnels and see what users are doing, understand like where people are having trouble. But honestly, I'd say like a lot of our driving decisions come from like conversations with people. You have to just like, which is why we have a Slack community where like people can post feedback and DM me at any point in time. I just make myself very available to our customers so that they can give me feedback. And I just try to be very responsive. will respond, try to respond within minutes, as long as I'm not otherwise occupied. And that informs your product decision. Lots of calls, lots of customer calls asking them, hey, like, what do you need help with? What is going to make you succeed? What can I do that's worth you paying money for something? I think the really hard part there is most people don't know what they want or what they need. And so you have to ask a lot of hard questions. I think the mom test is like the holy Bible in terms of the kinds of questions you should ask. But basically, you just want to observe and understand like what people say, and then figure out, connect the dots from lots of conversations and figure out like what should you be building. Yeah, but just you operate with a lot less data at a startup. And I think that's why you just need to be close to your customers and try to make the best decisions that you can. And the good thing about startups is it's not expensive to fail. Like, you're just a small company. If something doesn't work out, like, you can try something new next week, or if you launch a feature, it's not a big deal. At a company like Google, it's very expensive to launch a failed feature because you work on it for 6 months and you pull in lots of hours. Like, you have billions of people who might be impacted by it. And so you need that data to make those kinds of big decisions too.
So I think one thing that you're highlighting here that I think the audience really needs to make sure that we're getting is that conversations is where you're getting your data if you're a startup. I think a lot of people, when they start, they're like, oh, I need to do XYZ, collect this kind of data. But really what it comes down to is like talking to people, and you got to get outside of your shell and actually communicate with the people that are using and potential users, and make sure that you're getting that feedback from them. You mentioned the mom test. I've actually never heard of the mom test. Maybe I'm just blanking on it right now, but what is the mom test?
Yeah, no, it's the canonical book on how to run a user interview. So you talk to any product manager, founder, and user researcher, and they'll always recommend the mom test. It just tells you like how to go into a user interview or like talk to a potential customer with the goal of coming out of that conversation, understanding like their needs and what you need to be building without putting words in their mouth. I think a lot of people go into these conversations being like, here's my great idea. Do you think it's great? And people don't want to hurt your feelings. So they'll say, yeah, sure, it's great. And so this book tells you, basically helps you figure out like, how do you structure your questions so that you don't bias the person you're talking to, so that they give you their actual opinion and not tell you what you want to hear.
Any advice for people, general advice for people that are looking to create a startup and go on this journey? I know what you highlighted here is how difficult it can be, how many pivots, how many times you've changed, and just the difficulties that lie ahead in that journey. But just for people that are looking to make that journey, any advice for them?
Yeah. So I think the first thing is ask yourself why you want to do a startup. I don't think it's for everybody. It's pretty darn hard. And I think you see the success stories, but you don't see the 99.99% of people and startups who are failing. And even the success stories went through a lot of failure before they got there. I was just reading about the NerdWallet guy that just went public recently. He spent his first 3 years just writing a blog on like credit cards, and he made $2,000. And people asked him, like, why do you keep doing it? And he was like, nobody would hire me. It was the financial crisis. I got laid off Wall Street, so this is what I did. And now they do something like they're on track to do $360 million in revenue this year. So even the success stories, runaway success stories, had a really hard time. So ask yourself, are you willing to do this? Do you really want to do this? Are you doing it for the right reasons? Not because you want fame and fortune, but because you want to see something out in the world. You really want to solve this one problem, or you really want to be in control of your own destiny and be your own boss, or learn a lot of skills and be self-sufficient, be able to go from zero to one. If these are things that matter to you, yes, those are good reasons to start a company. Make sure you're starting a company for the right reasons. I'd say that's the number one thing. Else you're setting yourself up for a world of pain and disappointment. I'd say the second thing is trying to figure out, like, how do you set yourself up for success to start a company, and when do you want to do it? I think that comes down to just exposing yourself. Instead of doing what I did and quitting your job and then trying to figure out, like, how do I start a company or what idea should I work on? You're already probably working at a company and that company has problems, or you have personal problems in your life through like your hobbies or activities or whatever, like your day-to-day life. Be more cognizant, just like aware of problems for both businesses, for a company that you work for, and in your personal life and for people immediately around you. And if any of those seems like it could be something that a lot of people have, and you see a way like that it's a valuable problem, there are lots of problems which are not valuable. You think it's a valuable problem where people would pay for a solution, or you can find a way to make money, then pay a little more attention and then try to find more examples of that until you have some sort of conviction around an idea where you're like, hey, I think there's something here. I want to go do something about it. And then you'll organically have a great startup in many ways versus a forced process where you go through a lot of iterations and you have this pressure of runway and capital and you have enough money in the bank, social pressure from people asking you like, hey, like, how's the startup going? All that stuff. So yeah, if you can begin that discovery process, even before you've quit your job or before you've officially started a company, it will save you a lot of time and pain down the road. So yeah, be curious and start looking for opportunities. The other thing I would say is try to start a company that you think you're personally interested in starting and that matches well with your skill set. It's very hard to start a company or work on a company where if you're not like super technical, don't go start like a databases company. Or if you're not super into social media, don't go start like an influencer marketing platform. Figure out like, what do you enjoy doing? And don't stray too much from that. I think I personally enjoy providing value to businesses as a business owner and as a person who started a lot of companies. I understand that distribution is hard. And I think I've learned a lot in trying to help other people with content marketing and kind of not like a pseudo SEO expert. Like today, I talked to a customer and they were actually like, yeah, like, honestly, like we just like talking to you because you're an expert in SEO. And I was like, wow, I didn't know anything about SEO like 6 months ago. So yeah, I enjoy what I do. I enjoy the product that I'm working on. I enjoy the customers I serve. And I think that's so important to help you like stick through it for the long term. Because there's no such thing as there are such things as overnight success, but they're very rare. Most people just spend a lot of time working on something before it becomes successful. And you want to set yourself up so that you can get there.
Thank you so much. This is really great advice. Parthi, where can people find you if they're looking to follow along the journey or sign up for LetterDrop?
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter. I am Parthi _ Logan, Parthi _Logan. That's where most of my stuff is. You can also follow me on LinkedIn. I'd say those two platforms are where I post the most. And then if you're a business owner or a marketer and you need help with SEO and email marketing and things are starting to become a mess, or you just want to know like how to get started, definitely like visit letterdrop.com and or shoot me an email, parthi@letterdrop.com, and I would be happy to help get you set up.
Now, as always, I have my key takeaways from this episode, but before we get into that, I want to share a clip with you from our episode with Chris Blauvelt on LaunchGood.
Why should someone use your company, your platform, versus one of the established players out there? And there's always going to be an opportunity when it comes to personalized service. It's not scalable, at least early on, but that's okay, because one of those other aphorisms of Paul Graham is do things that don't scale. Early on, do things that don't scale. And it doesn't last forever. Brian doesn't still take photographs of people's apartments. But you know what they have done for Airbnb? They've set up a whole network of photographers that if you're listing your place on Airbnb, it's really easy to find a photographer in your location that can do the photographs for a couple $100. And this is what they do. And so you'll find those opportunities to scale if you've created something of value.
If you enjoyed this discussion with Parthi, I am sure you will also enjoy the discussion with Chris. Check it out wherever you listen to this podcast. It is episode number 28. Now here are my key takeaways. Number one, think through distribution before even building product. This is a mistake I learned the hard way. In one of the projects I was working on, we spent over a year building a product without even thinking through distribution. We wasted tons of resources, time, and energy without a way to actually get the product into the customer's hands. And number two, if you want to be a founder, if you want to create a product that actually makes people's lives better, you have to constantly be on the lookout for problems. And that is all for this episode. If you enjoyed this discussion, please consider leaving a review and sharing with a friend. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next week.